From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. Well, it's gardening season. Time to see what Mother Nature and you can do together with seeds, sun, dirt, and a little magic. It might be a plot of green goodness and a kaleidoscope of flowers, or a single pot holding a tomato plant and a little basil that's got you dreaming of marinara sauce. But before you can harvest, you need to plant and figure out how to keep things alive. Here to help, this hour On Point, top gardening gurus answer your questions. Join us. What are you growing? What's your question for our green thumbs? Join us at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook, where they're at On Point Radio. With us from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, is Bree Arthur, a horticulturist and author of The Foodscape Revolution, Finding a Better Way to Make Space for Food and Beauty in Your Garden. Bree, welcome. Nice to have you.
Thank you, Jane. It's my pleasure.
And with us from Seattle is Cisco Morris, former gardening columnist for the Seattle Times and the Seattle Post Intelligencer. He's a fixture on local radio and television and is the author of Ask Cisco, Ooh La La, Your Gardening Questions Answered. Cisco, welcome to you. How nice to have you.
Oh la la, it's really great to be here.
You say it correctly. Thank you. All right, Bree Arnold, I'll start with you. What is it about a summer garden that beckons you?
There are so many pleasures, from pollinators to harvesting and bringing that food in and sharing with your friends and family. Gardening is just the greatest expression that you can have through the summertime.
And Cisco, what about you? How do you see the essential steps or the essential ingredients of a successful garden?
I think the number one thing you need is to have fun. So as long as, you know, I feel so sorry for people who think gardening is an arduous task, you know. It's the funnest thing there ever was. You get to grow things, you know, if your kids grow them, they love to eat them. So I can get kids eating their veggies. Just the amazement of seeing a seed come to life and grow is so fun. And then if you want to make your garden look great, do all kinds of ornamental plants, then you're really going to have fun. You'll be poor, but you're going to have a lot of fun.
Can everyone do this? I have a listener here on Twitter who says, out of the 32 trees I planted this spring, maybe one will make it. No green thumb here. Is it just a matter of learning how to do it right? Can anybody do this, Cisco?
Well, I've always said that the person who murders the most plants will be the best plant expert, because you learn every time something goes wrong. So I think that's the key. Don't give up. You know, give it a try. Sure, it doesn't hurt to read a book or two and go to a few classes or seminars at nurseries. But the key thing is don't give up, because you got that one to grow. So you did something right there. You just got to learn from that one. Pretty soon, all 32 of them will live, and then you'll have no more room at all, but you'll have a lot of great trees.
Bree Arthur, the pictures in your book, Foodscape Revolution, are so beautiful. The pictures of the summer foodscapes, corn and okra and peppers and basil and marigolds and salvia, all together, it's just exquisite. Your philosophy is that landscaping can be pretty and purposeful. Tell us about that. How so?
Well, you know, I have always lived in suburban developments with homeowner associations, and there's a lot of misconceptions about what you're allowed to grow based off of those architectural review covenants. And what I really want to encourage people to see the power that their existing landscape offers, so that they can grow beautiful flowers and trees and shrubs right alongside all of their favorite vegetables, so that they get everything from this experience. I mean, like Cisco said, gardening is truly the greatest thing you can do with your time. Every plant you put in the ground is a contribution to the earth.
How do you combine ornamental and edible plants in one bed? I had never thought of it like that before, to put them together. And I'm quite frankly, I'm not sure I have room for both.
Well, what you first look for are areas of open mulch space, primarily areas around existing trees and shrubs that, you know, you may not have anything growing. And what you're really looking to do is just pair the plants with the same cultural requirements, meaning how much sun do they need, how much water, how much fertility. And, you know, find those little open pockets in your existing landscape and put in some, you know, annual vegetable crops that will complement your existing plants in the landscape. Mm.
Cisco Morris, I have a listener who's asking, I need serious help with poison-free pest control in my vegetable garden. That's Ines Walther from Facebook. What do you say? What tips do you have for Ines?
Well, I never use any chemical-type poisons in any of my gardens. But I think the key thing is to keep an eye out for pests, because like aphids, for instance, they're little sucking insects. They look like little dune buggies if you look at them with a magnifying glass. And, you know, they're one of the only insects that have live young. Mm-hmm. So by the time you see them, they've probably been underneath the leaves reproducing like crazy. All of a sudden you see them on top of the leaf. And you realize, holy cats, there's a million of them under there. If you just go and look under the leaf now and then, you'll spot them. And I have two kinds of pest control that I use the most in my veggie garden.
Uh-huh.
One is called El Kabotsky pest control. And that's where you insert the insect between thumb and forefinger, and you have to yell El Kabotsky as you squish for the full effect, you know. So I turn aphids into aphid marmalade quite a bit with my fingers. The other way is hold the leaves and branches of the plant, get your hose nozzle, put it on the shower spray, start gentle, and then literally blast those aphids and other pests off the plant. Hmm. If you do that, soft-bodied insects, they're so soft that if you blast them off, it kills them. Hmm. The problem is aphids do have live young, and others reproduce pretty quick. So you're going to miss some of them. They're going to keep pumping out babies.
Yeah.
So you got to do it like every 3 days. Three times you'll have the problem taken care of. And if it's caterpillars or something, just make sure that you hold them far away when you do El Kabotsky, because they can make quite a splat.
Takes a lot of work, Bree Arnold. I have to say, we had a neighbor who told us to use vinegar, salt, and a squirt of dish soap. And my heavens, it works. It really works. What do you say? What do you do? What are your tips? Keeping pests out.
One of my favorite things to do is really let nature take its course. Coming from the ornamental industry, we are realizing, you know, not putting out pesticides is really beneficial because you can allow biological controls to employ themselves. So in the case of aphids, often what you'll find is lady beetle larvae will come and eat those aphids, and generally within 10 days, you won't even have an aphid problem, and this whole other beneficial insect will be thriving in your garden. So a lot of times I just try and resist the urge to, you know, be a control freak in my garden and really allow the ecological system to play the role that it's meant to play. And I think we all have so much to learn from the entomology that exists in our gardens and appreciate how there's different phases and problem insects are only a problem when we focus exclusively on those.
Let's get a listener in here, Scott in Pembroke Pines, Florida. Hi, Scott. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you recommend any shrubs or bushes or flowering plants that iguanas don't eat? They come out of the lake like creatures from the Black Lagoon, and they go crazy, especially for white flowers, but they pretty much eat everything, and I'm at a loss.
Scott's got an iguana problem. Cisco Bree, what do you say?
Well, I have just one idea. I don't have many iguana problems in Seattle, Washington.
But I bet you have bunnies or deer. I mean, there are lots of problems in your garden. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm thinking the same solutions might work. And so one plant that many of us plant up here for deer problems and bunnies are herbs, because herbs really are strong flavored. And most of the pest-type animals don't really like eating real strong-flavored plants. So it might really help to put a lineup of really cool herbs out in front of your other plants. Show the iguana that these plants are just too strong-tasting to eat. And maybe that'll dissuade them and they'll go eat your neighbor's plants instead.
Maybe, Bree, it was in your book where I read that planting farmer style, you know, kind of row by row, planting your veggies that way, sort of a monoculture, actually makes it easier for rabbits and deer to enjoy your greens.
Well, it does. You know, and there actually are a number of plants that are really great for helping deter browsing mammals, you know, things like arugula and garlic and onions and, of course, herbs, as Cisco mentioned. But gosh, you know, for iguanas, that's a whole different world. I don't have iguanas in Raleigh, North Carolina either. However, I would think about planting some oleander or nerium because that's a highly poisonous plant and that might help with the iguana problem. I don't know exactly, but I would also recommend checking with a local extension agent. I'm not looking forward to the time when iguanas make their way north.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Andrew quickly in Allen Park, Michigan. Hi, Andrew. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I have a question on tomato plants. I have maybe about 8 plants, and in the past few years, they seem to wilt, sometimes branch by branch, only certain plants, and I was thinking it may be a grub problem, considering I ripped up some grass behind my garage to plant the garden, and, you know, I think grubs are normally found in grass soil. So
yeah,
I'll just turn it over and see if you have any recommendations.
All right, Cisco, quickly, do you have any thoughts?
I think what I would do would be I wouldn't plant tomatoes in that spot until you figure out what it is. So maybe plant them in pots for a couple years, and then those grubs will starve out if you're not. Most insects are pretty specific on what they'll eat. I have a feeling the grubs will take off and go somewhere else, and you'll be able to plant tomatoes there again.
All right, Andrew, good luck. Thanks for the call. We're talking about making the most of your garden's growing season. What's your gardening challenge or your success story? I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
She's got magic in her, you know what I mean? She puts the sun and rain in with her green beans, peaches on the shelf, potatoes in the bin. Supper's ready, everybody come on in and taste a little of the summer. You can taste a little of the summer. You can taste a little of the summer, 'cause my grandma put it all in jars.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're spilling the dirt on how to get the most out of your garden this hour, and you can join the conversation. Is gardening about the experience, or is it about the harvest? Are you a backyard gardener, a community gardener, a pot on the fire escape gardener? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. We've put some pictures that you've sent of your gardens up at our website, so take a look at that. We're in the garden with two of the best green thumbs in the country this hour, from Seattle, Cisco Morris, and from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, Bree Arthur. I want to play this clip of the Australian horticulturist and host of the Victory Garden, Jamie Durie, who's a fan of vertical planting.
There's something kind of nice about having something green and organic and flowering and soft climbing over something gnarly and industrial, you know?
Ah, interesting. Bree Arnold, talk about that vertical climbing, something beautiful and green and flowering, climbing out of something gnarly and industrial.
You know, I love vertical gardening. I have an incredible system called Live Screen, which can be ordered at livewall.com. And it's the ideal thing, especially for people living in condos or townhouses where you might have a shared back patio and it can be used as a separation. You can grow anything you want. It comes with a timer and automatically irrigates. So I frequently mix in summer plants like coleus along with peppers and eggplants and dwarf patio tomatoes to be able to make the most of growing vertically.
Excellent. Let's go to Jane in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hi, Jane. You're on the air. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks. I have a question. You were talking earlier about planting herbs to discourage pests. Well, I have a garden of herbs all in pots, and there's a little chipmunk in my yard who climbs into all the pots and eats the roots of the herbs. So is there a way to discourage that little guy from chowing down?
Your call, Jane, because this Jane has the same problem. I have chipmunks in my yard. Cisco Morris, what do you do?
Oh, it's really hard when you have chipmunks in the garden. Some people sometimes feed them, so you have a little feeding area.
And then you get more chipmunks.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's the same with squirrels. Don't feed them whatever you do. I think the only thing I could think is to try and put something on the soil surface so they can't get under there. Since they're in pots, there might be some kind of hardware cloth, chicken wire. I hate to have to do that because it doesn't look that great. But even if you have to make a dome of chicken wire, somehow you have to keep those little chipmunks out of there because they are persistent and they're going to eat no matter what. So I think I'd try and deter them from getting in there.
Jane, thanks so much for the call. Bree Arthur, you say that the biggest mistakes that people make in their garden, number one, they ignore the quality of their soil. Talk about building up a healthy base. How do you do that?
Adding organic matter every season is such an important component to successful gardening, especially for people living in new developments where the ground has been, really heavily compacted with equipment. You know, the more organic matter you can add, especially ground leaves, I always say it's in their name, leave the leaves, instead of having the city haul them off. The more
grass
organic
clippings
matter
too,
you
right?
add,
grass
clippings, yeah. If you make your own compost and certainly purchasing compost, just make sure that it's been aged and heated well enough so that you don't have any major weed problems. But every season when you go to plant, I definitely encourage top dressing with organic matter to be able to build a more healthy soil system so your roots will be able to help fight off any diseases and problem insects.
Second big mistake you say, watering. Tell us what's right, what we should be doing, what's wrong.
Well, I think watering is one of those intuitive skills, and most often people overwater because they love their plants to death. And generally, when people say they have a black thumb and they've killed a cactus, I think, well, yeah, that is the plant you're going to kill. So I think really important just to watch how your plants are performing, and if their leaves are wilting, that's an indication that you need to give them some water. But otherwise, I think growing on the dry side will actually make your plants much more successful in the long run. And you lessen your risk of having a lot of different disease pathogens impact your root system.
Cisco Morris, you talk about watering deeply and infrequently, right? Watering early in the cool of the morning. Those are a couple of tips that I've read from you.
Yeah, it's really important. And, if you water, let's say, your lawn every day for 20 minutes, the water doesn't soak in at all. It just keeps the soil surface moist. Mm-hmm. So the roots all come up to the surface, and you have no drought tolerance. If something happens and you go on a vacation, you don't water, those roots aren't down there where the water is. So if you water infrequently but deeply, and I recommend generally in warm weather, 1 inch of water every time you water. And so that can take it. The slower you put the water on, the better, because the more it soaks into the ground. It can take an hour and 45 minutes to put 1 inch of water on
an area. Okay, that's a big water bill, Cisco. That's a big water bill.
Yeah, the water department knows me by my first name.
Okay. Let me bring another voice in here from Lincoln, Nebraska. Janine Capot-Crusette. Her opinion piece for The New York Times is titled "The Terror of Getting Lettuce Wrong." So relatable. I should mention she's also a novelist, a short story writer, and an associate professor at the University of Nebraska. Janine, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Hi, Jane. Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
So you grew up in Miami, where things are lush and green. Tell me where you learned to love gardening.
Well, my grandfather grew all sorts of trees in the yard. He would try to replicate he was from Cuba, and my family came from there. And so much of my childhood was in a hammock between two trees that he was doing all sorts of things, which now we know not to do to trees. But he had all sorts of tricks that I think have been proven like really bad and you shouldn't do, like burying pennies all around the tree. Maybe that's, I mean, I want to ask the gardeners so many questions. I have to say, I'm learning a lot.
All right, burying pennies, that's a good one. I'm writing it down.
Oh, everything, anything metal, he would just like bury it in the ground. He's like, se hace la mata más fuerte, right? Like it makes the tree very strong.
Okay.
I don't know if that's, he also would like paint over with white, which I know you're not supposed to do anymore. But he, seeing him just relax in his garden and the pace of it, that was something that I admired and then kind of forgot about for 20 years as I built my writing career. And now that I have a house and a yard that and a strange climate to work with, it's something I'm trying to do. And it's not going so well.
So you decided to put down roots in Nebraska. You decided to put in a garden. This was new terrain for you. So you turned to a friend for some advice. And I wanted you to read that from your piece, Janine.
Yeah. I begged a friend who tends a thriving garden of her own in an even more wretched climate, so Minnesota. And I asked her to come visit me and help me come up with a plan. She explained how zones work and that the country is divided into chunks based on temperature, meaning which is low temperature, meaning zones are extremely depressing reminders of how palm trees will not survive in my yard. I never encountered the zone concept growing up in South Florida because A, anything you plant will grow and eventually take over your yard. And B, I never had a yard of my own when I lived there as an adult. So, I mean, I did lovingly tend to a few strips of concrete by sweeping them regularly.
But you took up gardening on the advice of your therapist, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Which, tell me more.
Now I'm like, what? She advised that I take up something that's not at all like writing. Because I'm lucky in that writing was always a hobby and I've been able to turn it into my career. So I thought, well, what's nothing like writing? Gardening. Gardening is nothing. I'm outside. I'm in the dirt. Well, it turns out writing is a lot like gardening. And gardening is a lot like writing. Like moving plants around is like revision and weeding is like line editing. I think the difference is no one's really looking at it. In the end, I'm just going to keep it behind the fence for as long as possible. But yeah, it was just about trying something that I would be kind of bad at for a long time and learning to accept that that's the state of things and learning from those mistakes.
Teaches you a lot about patience and resilience.
Absolutely.
I actually think gardening is an exercise in mindfulness. For me, that's how I look
yes.
at it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think gardening makes you see things you didn't previously notice. Like now, like one, I know the names of things. I'm learning the names of things. And I used to be like, oh, that's a plant over there. That's like a flower. And now I'm like, that's a nasturtium. And it feels so good to know what something is. Yeah. And I also notice other people's gardens and yards and like, oh, look, the lilies are blooming now. And I'm telling you, like 2 months ago, I would just drive by somebody's yard and be like, oh, this red light, why is it taking so long to get to where I gotta go? And now I'm like, oh, look, the red light is an opportunity to look at this yard and see what they're growing.
That's
and
nice.
It's helped me kind of, be much more present and mindful.
It's nice. Let's get another call in here. Elgin from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how's it going?
Well, thank you. Go ahead.
So my question is about strawberries and maybe soil. We've got strawberries. This is our second year. And the soil in the beds, I don't know. I think it's good soil. It seems very good. But the strawberries are growing plentiful. But when you eat one, it just doesn't taste like a strawberry. It tastes kind of sour and bitter and gross at the same time. And I'm just wondering if it's, we have a pecan tree
okay.
and a lot of like pecan husks get mixed into the soil. And I'm wondering if that maybe has something to do with it. And also our cat likes to litter box that flower bed too. So I'm wondering, is it because of the cat?
That's a good question.
Or the pecans?
Yeah. Let's turn to our green thumbs here. Bree and Cisco, what do you say?
Well, my first assumption with that would probably be the cultivar of the strawberry you're growing. So a lot of the perennial or day neutral varieties, which are sold, actually don't have the same amount of sweetness in the fruit compared to what you would buy at the grocery store or get from a seasonal strawberry producer. So if you have any records of what you bought, I know I grow a variety called Chandler, and it's great because it sets fruit all through the summer, but if you don't add sugar, it definitely doesn't taste like a strawberry. Mm. I would also encourage you, and this actually goes for the chipmunk question as well, to look into a product called I Must Garden. It's a really effective animal repellent that's based off of each different type of mammal. So in the case of your cat, there is a formulation that you can sprinkle that will deter your cat from going in and using that space as a litter box. And there's actually a chipmunk formulation as well that you can top dress your containers, and that will keep them from going in and digging up your roots. Hmm. So that product is called I Must Garden, and you can buy it online, and it's a very effective method to deal with these mammals.
All right, Elgin, good luck to you. Thanks so much for the call. Let's go to, let's see, Ray in St. Petersburg, Florida. Can we do that?
Hey.
Hi. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Yes, I have three community gardens here in St. Petersburg. I've been doing them for about 9 years or so. They're prolific, disease-free, and for the most part, pest-free as well. I've had a soil sample done by the IFAS at the University of Florida.
Okay.
And the results come out very well.
And what's your secret? What do you do?
My secret is compost, wood ash, and a top dressing of 8 to 10 inches of seaweed or seagrass.
Oh, interesting.
That releases nitrogen, minerals, holds moisture in the garden, and it smothers weeds when you put it on top of the soil. Hmm. And weeds are deterred from the summer, even, because they don't like the seaweed as wind-blown seeds into the garden.
Oh, that's interesting. Ray, thank you so much. Cisco, you did something like this for the campus of Seattle University. What do you make of Ray's recommendation, his secret sauce there?
Well, I kind of wish I could get that seagrass up here in Seattle. But, you know, what we used was wood chips from the arborist. I was a certified arborist for many years. So I had all my buddies bring their wood chips so that man or woman who's cutting down a tree or pruning the tree would throw those branches through the big grinder. And we used that for the whole 24 years that I directed the grounds care at Seattle University. And it gives you great weed control. You get mycorrhizae, which are little fungus nodules that attach to the roots of trees and woody plants and even perennials. And they send out little feeders that find nutrition and water for the plant, and they get rewarded for that by getting byproducts from the roots of the tree. But the best part of all is that it breaks down. Every year it breaks down. You get the best topsoil you've ever seen in your life. Mm-hmm. So we used it for years, took care of a lot of our weed problems.
Great.
And really develop great soil.
That's great. Cisco, thank you. And Ray, thanks for the call. Janine Capot-Crusette, I know you're going to leave us here. I wanted to give you a chance to ask our Green Thumbs the questions that you had. All right, pick one.
Okay, pick one. How do you keep going in the face of so much strife? I mean, I know that's like an existential question.
You don't want to ask about burying pennies? Come on.
Does cinnamon work to discourage ants? I read that on the internet and then bought a lot of cinnamon at Costco, and now my yard smells weird. Did I just really do a dumb thing?
Bree, cinnamon?
I have no experience with the cinnamon trick, but now that you've mentioned it, I'm going to go home and try it. What do you have to lose, right?
That's the attitude I want to get to. Like, that is why I'm gardening. I can be like, you know what? Maybe it works. Maybe it doesn't. It's all going to be fine.
It's the greatest experiment of your life.
Yeah.
All right. And Cisco, burying pennies, do they work? Does that work?
Well, no, I don't think I'd ever do that. For sure. But I will say one thing, and that is that gardening is therapy.
Yeah.
You know, I write a lot, too. And when I get out and work on my garden, it's just so relaxing and freeing. Even pulling those doggone weeds is fun, you know. I'm a plant collector. Get into plant collecting. Find the rarest, most unusual plants you can and plant them in your garden. Oh, is that ever fun? It's really cool when friends come by and you stump the livid tweedle out of them when they don't know what it is.
All right, Janine Capot-Crousette, thank you so much.
I really appreciate your time.
And Siskel and Bree, stick with us. We're discussing the joys, the tribulations of summer gardens. You can join the conversation, listeners. Do you have a gardening tip to share? What's spilling off your vines this year? Listeners, stick with me. I'll get to you after the break. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Getting shelter, there's much for you to do. Only ask and you will get what you're needing. The rest is up to you. Plant your love and let it grow.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're harvesting the best gardening advice this hour from the best green thumbs in the business. And you can join the conversation. How grows it? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. We're speaking this hour with horticulturist Bree Arthur and gardening great Cisco Morris. A lot of great comments from our listeners. Sonia Harris says, gardening is a necessary action for my soul. Not only do I get the opportunity to literally become one with the birds, but I get to reap the benefit of what Mother Earth gives. I've got a board full of calls. Let's go to Jeff first in Andover, Massachusetts. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
I have about 30 rose bushes on my property, and I have a 2-year-old and a 3-month-old. So I need to know how best to take care of these roses with what limited time I do have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff. Bree Arthur, what do you say?
Well, my best advice is maybe to do limited pruning in the winter and try to walk away from them. Roses can be high maintenance if you let them be. And if you find that you have plants with a lot of black spot or, you know, virus tendencies, I would just remove them and replace them with something that is less maintenance, like a hydrangea.
All right. Good advice. Thanks for the call. Cody asks, do you have any recommendations for a garden in a screened-in porch? Siskel Morris?
Oh, I think you can grow all kinds of things on a screened-in porch. You know, it all depends how much sun gets in there. If you get a lot of sun, tomatoes, everything in that tomato family, eggplants, all those kind of plants.
And what if you don't have a lot of sun?
Then you better stick to lettuce. But there's a lot of cool ornamentals you can grow that like shade. So, you know, everything from impatiens. There are some begonias that are so spectacular. Can't believe it. They bloom all summer long. Or you could go with something like a camellia or something, as long as it's hardy enough for your area, or a hydrangea. They're all beautiful and love shade.
All right, Cody, good luck. Here's another question on Twitter. Any tips for veggie gardening on little or no money, free or very cheap? Bree, what do you say?
Actually, yeah, there's a great new book from Katie Elzer-Peters that's all about reusing your kitchen scraps. So you can grow things like celery from what you buy at the grocery store and just root it and grow it out and then continue to harvest. And then seed is a really inexpensive way to be able to grow plants. You know, I always say 99 cents worth of seed will change your life. And so, you know, whether you're just being creative or, you know, indulging on the internet, I think that there's an endless amount of possibilities to keep your budget low and still have a lot of harvestability.
All right. One last from online. Kelly asks, what's the best way to wash fruits and veggies before eating? Cisco.
Well, I always wash them right before I eat them. So I bring them in, you know, I'm going to shake any dirt off them, anything like that. But I never wash any fruit or vegetable until right before I eat them. Then I put them in the salad spinner, you know.
Yeah.
Let them really go for it. But
I think she's asking, do you use anything, you know?
Oh,
soap?
I only use water on all my veggies and fruit.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Jessica in Arlington, Vermont. Hi, Jessica. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a question for you, guest. My husband and I recently purchased our first home, and the previous owner was an avid gardener. Our yard is full of hostas and lilies and various other plants that we have yet to identify. But it's pretty overgrown now. It's our first summer here. We just don't know where to start in, like, pulling things out or, you know, especially because it's kind of in phases, like things are blooming at different times. So we don't want to pull the wrong thing.
Right. You don't want to mistake a weed for something else. Thank you so much, Jessica. Bree Arthur, what advice do you have for Jessica?
Well, you know, there are actually some great plant ID apps that you can get and take a picture of what you're looking at, and then that will help identify what plant you're trying to deal with.
Do you have a favorite app? Do you have a favorite app?
Actually, there's one that's just called Plant ID.
Okay.
It works really well.
All right.
Often, if you see something that's really vigorous, that might be an indication that it's not the desired plant, but something that's inserted itself.
Uh-huh.
I think that, you know, you can often make that call just by observing how a plant grows. And if it seems like it's taking over the space, that's probably a call for removal.
All right, Jessica, good luck to you. Here's William in Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, William.
Hi, how are you?
Good, go ahead.
So I've got some plants in the front of my house that I've bought about a year ago, and instead of being the tacky gay couple who's got tiki umbrellas for all the plants to keep them from getting fried, what do you suggest? The only thing that's lasted is a rose bush and a hydrangea.
Aha, uh-huh. Okay. Cisco, what do you think?
Well, I'm amazed the hydrangea lasted out there in the blasting sun. I think the key is you got to find plants that like those conditions. So roses, they can handle a lot of heat. A lot of herbs, drought-tolerant plants, those are the kind of things you're looking for. They thrive on that heat. And where, you know, plants that don't really like a lot of heat, they're going to fry on you right away. So when you go to the nursery, say, I got the worst hot spot there ever was, what's going to not only survive there but thrive there? And you'll end up with a really beautiful garden in no time. And you won't even hardly have to water if they're drought-tolerant plants.
As the old garden maxim goes, right plant, right place, right? William, thank you so much in Atlanta. Let's go to Frank in Springfield, Ohio. Hi, Frank.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm part of a community garden, and it's new ground. It's a lot of compacted soil, and I've been trying to build up the soil using wood mulch. And this year I was given a bunch of hackberry mulch. And the chipper that cut this tree was very powerful. So they put actually large logs in this chipper. So the wood mulch is mostly wood and not that much leaf and twig matter. And I'm just wondering if putting coffee grounds over it after I spread it out would help it break down faster.
Oh, that's interesting. Frank, thank you. Bree Arthur?
Actually, I would be really careful, first of all, with adding coffee grounds in general, because that really will change the acidity of your soil. And I would recommend bringing in some more broken down organic matter and then doing some cover cropping. Things like buckwheat or daikon radish are very inexpensive. You can direct seed them, and that will actually do a much better job of breaking down that wood material and getting it incorporated down into the native soil. It's really difficult when you have fresh wood chips, because as those break down, they're going to rob the nitrogen from all the rest of the plant material, and you're really going to have to overcompensate with adding fertilizer. So make sure you let those wood chips age, and I would go ahead and add additional organic matter to make them break down even faster.
Thank you, Frank, for the call. Talk about starting to plant from seeds versus starting to plant from plants, even small plants. Cisco Morris, quickly, would you choose one way or the other?
Well, some plants are so easy to grow from seed, it's unbelievable. So broccoli, lettuce, carrots, there's a lot of plants that are really easy to grow from seed, and you just put them out in the garden. But if you're going to grow something like tomatoes, eggplants, anything like that, you're going to have some kind of setup or at least start the seeds inside. You can do it on a on a windowsill or something, but you probably are going to need bottom heat. So if I'm going to, if I don't have a lot of time and money, I'm probably going to buy starts of those plants and plant them out in the garden. But the things that are easy to grow from seed, I'm just going to go ahead and put those seed right into the garden.
Isn't transplant shock a real thing, Bree Arthur?
It is a real thing. And, you know, there are a lot of plants that will do significantly better. They'll develop deeper root systems if you direct seed them, and especially all of the greens, things like arugula and lettuce and chard and mustards. So I highly recommend experimenting more with seed, especially as a beginner, because you're going to learn so much more about the process of growing those plants out when you start them from scratch versus buying them and then, you know, going through the process of planting them in the ground and then not knowing exactly how to keep them watered for them to thrive.
Niagara Falls, New York. Susie is on the line. Hi, Susie. Welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
Sure. I have a 3-year-old nectarine tree, and I went out and it's got little sap bubbles coming out of the trunk. I don't know what that is.
Is that normal? Yeah, Cisco.
That sounds like a borer.
Okay.
Living in the Southeast, we have a lot of boring insect problems, particularly on stone fruit crops like a nectarine or a cherry or an apple.
So this is not a fungus. This is a borer. This is an insect.
It's an insect, and that causes the xylem to essentially like come out through the tree trunk, through the cambium layer. I would probably send a sample to your local extension to get confirmation, and then there might be some pesticide treatments that you could apply. But I generally, when I see borer damage, I just cut the tree down and start from scratch.
All right, Susie, thank you for the call. Lynn is in Wisconsin. Hi, Lynn. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I have ground ivy, or sometimes called creeping Charlie, which seems very invasive. It starts and it just takes all over. It's hard to get rid of. I pull it. And do you have some suggestion?
Ground ivy, creeping Charlie. I have a listener here, Lincoln, who's got crabgrass, too. These are invasives, I guess. Cisco, what do you say?
Well, you know, I am a non-pesticide gardener, so I don't want to use herbicide on those. Sometimes that's the only way. Like if creeping Charlie gets into your lawn, you may be forced to use a herbicide to compete with that. If you let your grass grow taller and thick, that'll help a lot. If you're desperate and you have to go after it, what I use is straight white vinegar from the grocery store. I stick it in a sprayer, and it'll pretty much kill anything it hits as long as you spray it on a hot, sunny day. And so it's going to kill the grass, too, so you're going to have to start over. But if you could get all that creepy Charlie out of the garden, then you'll be in good shape. You know how it gets in most lawns and things? It's people putting in their containers as something to weep over the side. It hits the ground, and it takes off running. So watch out for that.
All right.
There's one problem. There is one problem if you use vinegar. If you have a hot date planned for that night, make sure it's someone that likes pickles, because you're going to smell like the world's greatest pickler for 3 days after you do this.
All right. Bree Arthur, you talk a lot about planting next to your house, right? I'm curious, in those old homes that have lead paint possibly in the soil, this goes back to make sure you have good soil quality. What do you say about that? It's a big problem.
Yeah, that is a big problem. And I would definitely get a soil test. I do soil tests every season just to make sure that I understand what I'm working with. And if you have lead paint on a house, stick with ornamentals right up against that foundation. And then you can plant your food crops farther along the edge, which is a really great place to site food because you're going to need to tend to it more regularly. And the edge is a really easy location to access.
All right, back to the phones. Lynn in Delray Beach, Florida. Hi, Lynn. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. So what I would like to make a quick comment about and hear what everybody has to say about it. In my yard, my husband and I are avid gardeners, and we've created a habitat. So the concept is plant as many native plants as you can, And what you're doing by doing that is creating a place for everything to thrive. So not only the plants, which they do, but also the butterflies, the birds, hummingbirds, the squirrels too. But, you know, for to have a comment about that, it's a very holistic concept. And thank you.
Oh, great. Lynn, thank you. Bree Arthur?
I completely agree. I think that we're living in a time now where we can really celebrate the fact that we're part of an ecosystem instead of being on top of it. And the more diversity in our plant material and the insects and creatures that we allow to live and coexist with us, the better our gardens are going to be.
Thanks so much for the call, Lynn. Cisco Morris, help us with a planting calendar. What should we be planting now through the summer and maybe into the fall even? I guess it depends on where you live. And what should we save for the spring?
Yeah, it makes a big difference where you live. Right now, we're planting overwintering broccoli and Brussels sprouts, all kinds of cabbage family plants that we'll harvest in spring. But you can only do that if you live where the winters don't get very cold. Spring, the key is wait until the soil dries to about the consistency of a squeezed sponge. You don't want to plant and work wet soil. You'll destroy it. But as soon as it gets like that, it's time to plant your greens, you know, so all that arugula, lettuce, spinach. And it's also a great time for carrots. And then you got to wait a little while. It can't be too cold when you plant your cabbage plants. And finally, the tomatoes and everything in the tomato family, except for potatoes. You could plant those in April. Mm-hmm. But most of those, you got to wait until the soil temperature warms up. It's really soil temperature that matters. So if you're going to plant squash, cucumbers, you want that soil temperature to be steady, 60 degrees. Get a soil thermometer. It's the best tool for vegetable gardeners.
And Bree Arthur, it's a beautiful thing if you can preserve what comes from your garden and can, right? Can it for all year long.
That is so true. And canning is so much easier than people really think it is. You can watch YouTube videos and, you know, start simple, like with pickles right now. In fact, I was making pickles yesterday. And, you know, I like to can tomatoes so that I can have that delicious, fresh taste of summer any time of the year. But canning is a wonderful thing to do on a hot day. You can stand in your air-conditioned house and watch Netflix while you preserve your harvest.
All right, last words of inspiration. Cisco Morris, Bree Arthur, last words of inspiration for those of us who need to get out into our garden or those of us who are already there.
Well, I recommend if you want to get into gardening, either start a small vegetable patch, grow things like lettuce and some tomatoes because they're fairly easy, put some basil in there, and start a little ornamental garden right by the entrance of your house. Everybody will see it, compliment it, and you'll just keep going from there.
Nice. Bree Arthur, you get the last word quickly.
Hope springs eternal. Never give up. And if you have a black thumb, you'll turn it green with enough experience.
Bree Arthur, Cisco Morris, thank you both so, so much.
Oh, la la. This was fun.
Thank you. Listeners, keep your gardening photos, stories, and tips coming. Share with us on Twitter, Facebook, at On Point Radio. And great to have you with us today. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.